It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And you are joining us today here in the studio with on this very special 499th episode of the Van Wee Financial Hour, which just doesn't seem possible. And Adam shot me that note real early this morning. I've been thinking about it ever since, and I think we have to do something really cool for next week for number 500.
Yeah, it's a pretty big milestone.
It is. So I'm thinking we ought to give everybody that show for free.
I don't know. That seems a
he controls the
bit over the top.
We'll see what kind of a mood he's in this week. I tell you one thing, though. If the market does this week what it did last week, he'll be in a really good mood.
Well, then I might consider it.
Yeah, okay, good. Anyway, it just doesn't ring as even humanly possible that we could have done so many of those over that many years, and here we are. Incredible. Anyway, for all of you who've been with us either from the start or for a long time, welcome back. You know, we all appreciate you always being here. That's why we do this. And for those of you who might be new or relatively new to the show, just try to listen the whole hour, and we always tell you you'll learn something. I don't think we've ever disappointed anybody on that. And maybe, you never know, maybe you'll get up some nerve one of these days and pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and we'll put you on air to discuss whatever's on your mind. We don't bite. There are no easy questions. The rules are very simple. Your job is to make us look good. So ask away, and we'll discuss it. Anytime we can't give you an answer right away because we don't know or has to have some research, we'll always do that in the next show. So you'll get your answer either immediately or soon. So if you're interested in money, and I can't imagine anybody out there who isn't, then this is your place to be. I've always wondered why people listen to pre-recorded shows when they can get something current going on. We're not that way. We like to just talk to people, and we like the people to talk back to us. So we'll get into it. As Angela, if you're listening to the real estate show, as Angela pointed out right at the close, we have thumbs up this week. It was another absolutely interesting and profitable week in the market, and Adam will tell you all about it.
Yep. If you were hoping for a bounce back from last week, you were in luck because it was a massive rebound from a really horrible week last week. This is why you can't do short-term reactions in the market, because if you miss this week, you are going to be very upset with yourself for doing so. We didn't see any new all-time highs, but we did undo a lot of the damage from last week. The Dow gained 2.6%, the S&P was up 4%, and the NASDAQ rebounded 6%. Pretty big numbers there. However, all three indexes are still down slightly month to date, that's why we haven't seen the new highs. And the NASDAQ is still down slightly for the quarter, while the other two are up. So not all bad news, and they're really just down slightly. So we're sitting right there underneath all-time highs. And I think intraday we may have even hit it on one of the indexes, but I didn't go back and check that. So
yeah, intraday maybe. But yeah, it depends if you're looking intraday versus closing prices.
Right. We always look at closing because that's just kind of the way the world works. But I pretty sure the market was up a little bit more than it ended on Friday. So I think we did maybe touch on one of the all-time highs on an intraday basis.
Very possible. It was nice though not to get a sell-off on Friday.
Yeah, definitely.
It could be off a little bit. But
we did see a sell-off after the debate the next morning. Whew, it was ugly, but man, what a reversal. Yep. Really, one of the sharpest turnarounds, not sharpest because it didn't happen quickly. It took all day, but it was just a huge comeback.
That's actually the source of the trivia questions.
Okay. I won't go too far into it then, but it was a big comeback during the week. Mm-hmm. The last 2 years have been pretty strong on cap-weighted indexes, which is, when I say the S&P 500, you think SPY, that's the biggest ETF that tracks that. I think it's the biggest in the world, and it's cap-weighted. So the larger companies have a larger percentage of the index. So they influence it more. So if you see Apple go up 10%, it's going to have a lot bigger effect on the index than the 499th largest company in the S&P 500, which will just be a tiny, tiny fraction of SPY. So that has done really well. QQQ, another cap-weighted ETF, that's done really well. But if you look at the equal weight index, that's a whole different story. And the difference there is that the larger the company, it doesn't make any difference on the effect of the overall performance on the index. Every company has the same weight and the index on the equal weight index. So if you look at those, it's just under. So since 2022, the beginning of 22, right before everything went down in 22, it set an all-time high. The equal weight index did. Since then, it's up just under 6% in those two, three years. You look at the actual S&P, it's up way more than that. I didn't actually pull the numbers, but it's way more than that, like well in over 30%, I would guess, higher. But the equal weight index is up just under 6%. The NASDAQ equal weight is even worse. It is still below its previous peak from the end of 2021. This is also true across a variety of other asset classes. So my point in bringing this up is that if your portfolio hasn't seen the same returns as SPY or QQQ, there's a good reason for that, especially if you just have a small portion of your portfolio dedicated to those two indexes, which you should, but let's say you're even at 50%. You've gotten great returns on those two asset classes, but chances are everything else you own hasn't seen the same returns. If you hold a dividend fund, if you hold international fund, if you hold a small cap or mid cap fund, if you hold a bond fund, none of those things have seen returns anywhere near what the cap weighted indexes have seen. And this is all because the seven largest tech stocks have been dominating performance since 2022. And that is why. So unless you are overweight in those particular stocks, you just are not going to match the performance of the cap weighted indexes. So don't freak out. That's okay. You don't need to match it, because at some point those seven stocks will falter or everything else will catch up. And that's just how it is. So I like this analysis just because it shows you that sometimes a diversified portfolio works in your favor, especially on the downside, but sometimes it doesn't. And this is one of those times, but you're still doing pretty well, I would imagine, but you're probably not going to see the performance of the NASDAQ or the S&P.
And for some people who hold some of these individual stocks or the ETFs that aren't doing as well as the big ones, then it might be time to look into a Roth conversion as we near year.
Roth conversion or a rebalance where you sell off some of the high-performing indexes and buy some of those underperforming assets. If you had done that at the end of June and bought into some real estate, some utilities, you would see that those have done really well during this quarter.
Yep, lots of ways to play this thing because there's a lot of room to go here and there. We'll get into this again. Lots more to come right after a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. I mentioned that our trivia question was about this sort of rare occurrence that happened on Wednesday this week. Following the debate, people, of course, all had their opinions ready to go into it, and when they watched, they came out with opinions afterwards. Sometimes they changed their mind. Some people panicked and so on. Anyway, the market woke up in a very bad mood and sold off, and it was down over 1%. But kind of like dealing with the Fed or the debate or anything, people think about what was actually said and done, and they think, well, it really wasn't that scary, so what do? They put their money back in the market, and it closed up for the day over 1%. How many times since 1990 have we had a day where the S&P was down over 1% and ended up over 1%? It's a whole number, and I'm going to tell you that it's not 0 or 1 because you already know it's 1.
Yep.
That's pretty definitely. Helpful, wasn't it?
Yeah. No. Okay. But also, they really, I think you brought up a good point. It really reminded me of a Fed day.
Yep,
it was
exactly.
very similar type of trading.
And unsurprisingly, that's been related to a lot of these occurrences.
Of course. Yeah. I'm not surprised at all about that. So let's talk more about this quarter, Q3, that we're in, and how it compares to the first half of the year. It's been really different. There are areas of the market that were hot that are now cold, and vice versa. If you look at energy, technology, and semiconductors, they were all doing really well through June, all three of those areas, but they all have negative returns in quarter three. Real estate was negative in the first half of the year, but it's rallied more than 16% this quarter, and now it's positive. Utilities, they actually had a decent first half of the year return, but they've tacked on another 14% this quarter. So way just in the 2.5 months, they've added more than they did in the first 6 months.
Yeah, they were beaten up so unnecessarily.
So yeah, you're seeing a lot of reversals like that. That's yep. That's a sign of a healthy market, though. I really like to see things like that. International stocks have been pretty mixed lately. Mexico has been by far the worst performer. This is a direct result of their recent election, where the far-left candidate won and also got a majority in the other parts of the executive branches. And
serves them right.
One party having that much power is almost never a good thing for the stock market.
Especially when they're socialists.
Yeah, the anti-business sort of rhetoric that's spewed by that side is definitely not helping, but it's really not helped their market at all. The market's down over 20% this year. Brazil, which replaced a right-wing president with a far-left-wing leader, has been tanking as well, but it bounced back a bit this week. I wasn't sure what was behind that news, but they
getting rid of X.
Oh, maybe.
People yeah. can't read all the dumb stuff
forgot
that goes
about
around.
That. Yeah. The market is down about 14% in Brazil this year, despite about a 6% bounce back this week. Hong Kong and China are two more markets struggling this year, with Hong Kong down over 6% and China flat. On the flip side, India has been one of the best performing markets, with a gain of over 18% this year. And I think that China and India thing are directly related. As China has been unable to get any footing, India has really seen a surge. So I think a lot of companies looking for alternatives to China.
A lot more trustworthy in India, I think. You never know what they'll do in China. India is a pretty steady place to be.
Yeah, that's probably an accurate statement. The commodities market has been down a bit this year as inflation cools, but precious metals have been rallying. Both gold and silver are up more than 23% this year. Agricultural commodities are also up over 20% year to date. The fixed income market is also up on lower interest rates, with almost all of that gain coming in the third quarter. That's another area. Fixed income was dropping through June this year, and then all of a sudden it's rallied pretty hard, and it's looking pretty attractive right now. The big question of the week, though, is what will the Fed do next week? A quarter point or a half point rate cut? Odds are this morning, I checked right before I came into the show, 50-50 exactly between the two options. And that's kind of how I feel about it, too. I might be 51-49, but pretty darn close. The CPI and PPI reports for this month both show that inflation has slowed, but core levels were still above their estimates. So we're right there, but we're just a little on the high side on the core CPI.
But then you dig deeper, and you got to understand that rent, housing in general,
yeah,
plays the biggest role in all that. And that doesn't move overnight.
No, it takes a long time for housing prices, and specifically rental prices, which are typically year or more long contracts, to come down.
That would argue for the 25 basis points, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Because you can't correct that part of it right now. If you look at the real inside baseball numbers on that, the PCE is really in very good shape. It's well under their target.
The other reason that I'm leaning towards a quarter point is that a half point feels a bit desperate. Yeah. And I don't think the Fed wants to signal that we're in really big trouble right now and we need to
Or that act. They screwed up by waiting so long.
That too. That's another good argument.
They're
for
trying to look really good right now.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, they have a chance to look real good. So if they do things right, if they continue to do things right from here on out, they might pull it off. I'm not going to make a prediction about it, but It could happen.
Either of those two possibilities, and I honestly don't think there are any other possibilities,
but no.
Either of those two is going to cause the usual hand-wringing and sobbing and crying and all, and then there will be no real impact.
Yeah, I agree. You'll see
interest rates come down a bit, your fixed income funds are going to go up, and people will say, okay, well, this is a good start on the stocks. Theoretically, it's just going to be good for the market no matter how you're planning.
Yeah, I think next week you're going to see a bunch of volatility. It's going to be all over the place. But the long-term effect of lowering interest rates is going to be positive on both the stock and the bond markets.
Yeah. It's already being noticeable in the real estate market itself. Mortgage rates are anticipating a further reduction, and it's getting to the point now where they're actually below the long-term average, and buyers, I would imagine, are starting to give some pretty serious consideration to coming back into the market.
Yeah, and I think you're seeing some refis already, too. I saw an advertisement this morning that you can now save a whole point on refiing if you got your mortgage at the peak.
If you can get one or better, then it's worth looking into.
I think there is going to be some people that are going to hold out and wait for it to drop further, just because it seems pretty clear that it's going to happen. And you don't want to pay $5,000 now to refi or whatever it costs and then pay $5,000 again next year to refi.
No, and I think the one thing you can pretty much say for sure about the Fed, regardless of what they do this time, this is the first of a few.
Yeah, I think
you're
that's pretty clear.
You're virtually guaranteed to have three or four more before the rate cycle changes.
Yeah.
And that means with every one of those, the mortgage rates are going to come down. So people waiting a bit are just being smart, I think.
Yeah,
I agree. If there's a house you really want and you wanted it a point ago, might want to go ahead with it now, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think rates coming down like this could pick up demand. Angela was just saying on her show that we're at 6 months of inventory. We haven't heard of that number in a long time, especially in Jacksonville and Florida in general. So we're at 6 months, which is historically a balanced market, but that could switch right back to a seller's market if demand picked up.
It could indeed. Right now, there's not a whole bunch of bad news to report.
No, not really. I think it was an excellent week. What shifted the mood from last week? I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like a whole lot changed.
Yeah, we were remarking in the break how similar this month is to last month, too, where we start the first week with a sell-off, and then the market perks up, and it's doing it again.
Yeah, it's still September. Don't be surprised to see it go down next week. It's the worst month of the year. So,
one thing that would probably surprise me the most is if we didn't set a few new records between now and year-end.
I would be pretty surprised by that. Unless,
even if it takes till December.
Yeah, barring some black swan type event I don't see any reason that couldn't happen.
Yeah, the fiscal year for the government is coming up in a couple of weeks too. It's September 30, at which time they'll start to set a lot of things like the increase rate for Social Security, and they'll start talking about what's going to change in tax laws and that sort of thing. At least that would be true if they ever decided to go to work. And so far, the jury's out on that.
If you haven't made your third quarter estimated tax payment, get it in.
Yes, right now it's important. So we'll see. It's always a crapshoot to a degree, but right now I'd say the signals are pretty much in our favor.
So yeah.
I'm not going to take every bit of cash I've got and throw it in the bond market, and I'm not going to take every bit of cash and throw it in the stock market either, because there's still plenty of volatility coming. But I'm not going to run and hide.
Yeah, the only change that I've been making is as I bought so many individual bonds and treasuries over the last few years, and as those come due, I'm looking at the options. And right now, I think bond funds look the most attractive, just because the potential for price appreciation is greater than the yield that you can get from an individual bond. So I've been buying a lot more bond funds and a lot less individual bonds, unless there's a specific reason to do so.
I noticed that of all the various bond types of ETFs and such, TLT, the long treasury ETF, is doing very well.
I think it's up 10% in the last 3 months, like, or that. Something
it was
like that.
Just this week it was like 3.5. So that means that you're starting to leverage your longer bonds. So mm-hmm. we've been sticking them real short for quite a long time because you wanted them to turn over. And now if you start pushing your durations out, you'll get a lot more leverage than you would on the short ones. But I'm definitely picking up little bits and pieces also, and we'll see what happens. But there's no question to me that we're getting a rate cut this week. All right, lots more to come right after a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay some bills and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind everybody the trivia question is out there. This week, on Wednesday, we saw a sort of unusual event whereby on Wednesday, the S&P 500 index dropped more than one percentage point. During the day, reversed and actually closed up more than one percentage point. How often has that happened since 1990? All right, well, I did everybody the favor this week. I took one for the team, watched the entire debate, even though 15 minutes into it, I had to get a couple of tacks and stick them in my arm just to wake up. It was tedious, it was awful, it was rotten, and anybody who watched it knows this. But what came out of it, I believe, is going to be the nothingness, the vacuousness of one of the candidates. And we still don't know what any proposals are going to be. But we do have some proposals from some people that do make sense. And I have here in my left hand the one I like the best. Only this didn't come from a candidate. Unfortunately, it's in Congress. But there is a new piece of legislation that was introduced that would put this into the tax code. It would allow an above-the-line tax deduction for Americans who are 65 and older, $25,000. And it has a couple of nice little quirks to it. It phases out between $100,000 and $125,000 in income a year. But if you're married, then it doubles up. So it phases out between $200,000 and $250,000. And if you're married and both over 65, then the credit itself doubles as well. So I think this is something we could really do to help the seniors. You know, there's kind of a supplemental or conflicting proposal from Trump out there that says no tax on Social Security. And all of these things are difficult to do. The Social Security one has a little bit different reasoning than the other because Social Security is funded partially by the tax people pay on their Social Security benefits. And this one is a straight tax deduction. So this one is sitting in general revenues and could be done easily. But the other one is sitting in Social Security and will not be that easy to do. They haven't figured out a way to refund it. And, of course, Congress being Congress, somebody's going to say, well, gee, this is nice. How are you going to pay for it? And to me, the dumbest question that anybody ever gets or even asks in Congress is how are you going to pay for something? I'm getting a flashing on my red light here. I hope nobody's getting cut out. Anyway, the reasoning being very simple. In order to pay for anything, we first have to stop spending about $3 trillion every year that we're borrowing. So paying for it is a superfluous way for a politician to look like they care. But I'm telling you, if you want seniors to live out a better life and you've got two choices, don't tax Social Security or take this tax deduction, I'll take the deduction every day. There are probably a lot of people who would argue with me. And, of course, option C would be both. And, of course, I'm feeling this way because I am totally and completely anything but unbiased being over 65 and married over 65.
Yeah.
So it's my opinion, and I'm not going to change it.
There's another proposal put forth this week after the debate, actually, about eliminating tax on overtime. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you got to understand it first, and I don't think most people do. Overtime pay is that which is paid in excess of your straight hourly pay.
Right.
So what they're really talking about is the halftime, if you get time and a half for overtime, that halftime But that's not exactly true either, because that is going to be applied to Social Security and Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
That will have to come out of there. Not only would it have to, it should, because that's going to increase the participants' eventual Social Security payment.
Right.
So they should pay it voluntarily and willingly, but not paying the federal tax on top of that, I think, is kind of a stroke of brilliance. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there needs to be an income limit on it, because I could see a lot of people trying to reconfigure how they pay themselves.
Most of these things are in some way, shape, or form contained, I guess.
But yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think that if you're working hourly and you are at the, you know, under $100,000 a year, I think it's a good idea. I like it.
Yeah, and I love the way Trump put it, too. He said this would apply to the hardest working Americans.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think that's a brilliant concept, and it's a brilliant presentation. And hopefully there's a lot of people out there who believe it can get done. That one of the problems with all of these things is that the president doesn't change the tax code.
Nope, Congress does, and he just signs off on it if it works, or she.
Yeah, he can, the bully pulpit, as they say, the president can submit the budget and all the ideas, but it's still got to get through.
It's still got to pass the Byrd rule, too, which is, that's tough as well.
The 10-year thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and working against him is the people who are trying to end the filibuster. But that, even though it's aimed directly at Trump to try to weaken him, if they actually did it, that would make this proposal easier to get.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen either. Yeah, they went through all that stuff with the judges, and it bit them in the rear. It
still is. On with the biting them every day. So,
You know, the more you try to change things in D.C., the messier it gets. It's just so complicated and so huge. But I do think it was an interesting proposal, and it's worth the light of day talking about it.
So I caught a Angela talks about this because I had sent her the article, but I caught this interesting I was browsing the Wall Street Journal, which I do most days, and one of the headlines caught my attention because it said selling in Jacksonville is rough going unless your home costs millions. It's like, well, they can't be talking about Jacksonville, Florida, but sure enough,
like
they were. And I don't know why they picked Jacksonville. They said they, well, I guess they said it's the best example in the country of this. They were, and they kind of picked and choose their data. And I thought Angela did a good job of breaking that down. But the article was saying that if you are below $1 million, if you're a non-luxury home, it's kind of a tough sale right now. Probably due to which surprised me, because I thought homes at the lower end of the spectrum were actually selling quite regularly here. And then I'm seeing a lot more listings in neighborhoods like at the beach and in the higher price markets than we were a while back. But they're saying that if you're over $1 million, the homes are selling faster than if they're under $1 million. And I thought that was an interesting stat. I thought the opposite would be true.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, I guess if you listen to what's been going on with the haves and have-nots, the separation has gotten bigger. And part of the reason for that was COVID, because the people who got hurt really badly.
Yeah.
And what we should be doing, obviously, is promoting them. One of the other things that really concerns me right now, and this is election-related too, if one side wins, the current tax rates, which were brought in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act in 2017 and effective January 1, 2018, they will be made permanent. And the other side will just let them expire. And that's going to cost middle and lower class people about $2,400 per household in excess taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hear talk of, well, we're going to lower taxes on the middle class. So what are they talking about? Not taking those tax brackets and letting them expire? I don't know. They won't tell you.
No.
The hardest thing about evaluating any of these proposals is what you're not told.
That if they would just say that, then you could kind of do your own analysis and see how that would affect. Like if they said, we're going to stick with the 10, 12, 22, and 24 brackets where they are currently indexed for inflation, but we're taking the other brackets back to where they were, okay, that's a proposal I can look at and evaluate and say, okay, I agree with this or I don't agree with it, but they won't do that. So how are you supposed to evaluate the concept if you don't know what it is? It's really difficult.
Agreed.
And I don't
have to understand the tax code anyway.
Yeah. But for people who do, I think you need more of a concrete proposal to make an evaluation on a proposal.
Absolutely.
With this vague notion of I'm going to cut taxes on the middle class, but I'm not going to tell you how, that doesn't help me.
If you're old enough, you remember when Clinton made that promise and then it came time to deliver. And he gave his famous, I just worked harder than I've ever worked in my life before, and I just can't find that middle-class tax cut.
Well, there's a history in politics of people going back on their word.
And, yeah, you
no,
think?
Read my lips, no new taxes. And a lot of times it does have to do with taxes, ironically.
Oh, by the way, one thing I forgot to mention when I was talking about the $25,000 for seniors thing, it's an above-the-line deduction.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is worth a whole bunch more
yeah.
than a below-the-line deduction, mm-hmm. as it means you don't have to take it off of the taxes that you're going to owe. It just doesn't hit your income line. So just for people who won't understand those things, if I'll keep reporting on it. If it moves along through Congress, I'll let you know. Don't hold your breath, though. Here's a quick goodie. 76% of patients who argued a medical bill, one, they got a price break. And it happened to me twice.
It's happened to me before, too.
Don't be afraid to pick up the phone when you get a medical bill that doesn't seem right to you. And if you argue it, there's a really good chance you're going to win this thing. We had it on a coding problem. It happened to be Mayo.
Happens all the time.
Anybody. And say, well, this should have been a covered service. And they look at it and say, oh, yeah, it was miscoded. Bang, your bill, one of them was about $450. It went to zero just for asking the question.
Yep.
So don't be timid, people. Now, we do have somebody on the line, and I don't have time to take it. So please hold, if you will, until after the break, and we'll pick you up. The second we come back, we've only got about another 15 seconds. By the way, the European Union just fined Apple and Google in the billions of dollars. And they didn't even, Ireland didn't even want the money. This is ridiculous, people. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we lost our caller, and I ask you, please call back if you can, but it was a question about the real estate segment that Adam did, and we would love to hear more. So, I mentioned that the European Union fined Apple and Google for supposedly underpaying taxes because they paid the tax rate of the country they're operating in. Yeah. And people like Janet Yellen couldn't live with that. So she worked around the globe to get a minimum 15% tax rate. Ireland doesn't want it. So Apple's operating in Ireland. They owe $14 billion in taxes, according to the EU courts. And Ireland doesn't want the money, but they're going to take it because they have to. This is big government at its absolute worst.
I just don't even understand how countries aren't allowed to make their own laws. It's ridiculous.
What England got out of it, and I think there will be more, but it couldn't come soon enough. I got an article right here. I don't know those of you who follow international politics very much, but England got a new leader. I use that term very loosely. And again, they're leaning Marxist on this, and they're attacking people with money. So what's going to happen? A record number of millionaires are going to just say goodbye to Great Britain amid looming labor tax rates. Why can't they figure it out? I don't know. 9,500 millionaires will leave Britain this year, the highest of any country except communist China. What's going to happen when all that runs? And Sweden did it, but then they repealed it because what they found was they were gaining, their 75% tax or whatever it was gaining a couple $100 million in revenue, but hundreds of millions of dollars left, the wealth left. Without the wealth, you don't have incomes, you don't get taxes. France tried to do, remember the guy, Gerard Depardieu,
mm-hmm.
actor? France tried to hit him with a 75% tax rate, and he moved a few miles away. It just happened to turn into Belgium right there. They never learn. Kingston Trio was right. When will they ever learn? All right, you want to take anything, or shall I go through a few more of my little goodies here?
Yeah, go ahead.
All righty. Medicare. I said last week I was going to be talking more about Medicare, and this is neither all good nor all bad. But Medicare, for those of you who are at all familiar with it, Part D Medicare is the drug plan, and it's optional. More on that in a minute, too. But if you remember from its very inception, because it's expensive, the way it finally got implemented was there were shared costs. There's a deductible and then shared costs. And then there was this time when you had to pay it all. And only when you got above that did the plan actually pick up 100%. That interim stage is called the donut hole. And people have complained about the donut hole forever. And they finally are fixing it. And that's going to take place very soon now. On January 1, there's no more donut hole. And that means a bigger deductible and bigger copays and on and on and on. But what it means for most people who are not in it, and I'm not, it won't affect me to speak of. But if you're in your 60s and you're working for a company that has a health plan that includes a drug portion, that drug portion is today probably qualified to substitute for Part D for when someone turns 65. Most people, when they turn 65, sign up for Medicare, and their company plan becomes their supplemental plan. But not all. Some plans are qualified by Medicare to remain the primary, so people, as long as they're working, do not have to take the Medicare, because some people don't want to. And if you don't sign up for Medicare and you're not covered by a qualified plan, okay, the caller's back. I'll wrap this up real fast. If you're not covered with a qualified plan, there are lifetime penalties. This is going to change because those plans are going to be reviewed and renewed. If you're one of those, especially if you're 64 and still going to work, ask your employer if anything's changing, and don't take I don't know for an answer. Mr. Walker, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. You were fading in and out. I don't know if it's because of this new phone I got or what. You know,
I've had a couple of glitches on our little you're on air light, so I'm not sure what's happening there. But go ahead.
So, and I was calling a reference, and I probably should have called in and talked to a real estate program. But this is going on in Texas. Apparently, in Texas, as opposed to Florida, you know, everybody's flocking there. And what this team has gotten together, one is in real estate, and the other one is kind of a quasi-investigative report, but he's done his work. And he's found that so many properties, multifamily and single family, have been really slammed with property taxes there to the point that, you know, one house compared to the house next to it in property tax costs is through the roof, you know. And you know, a lot of people are being financially harmed about this, you know. And so the guy that did the investigative reporting has it all documented, and it all boils back to what that the creature from Georgia, what's the name of that book?
Jekyll Island. Creature from Jekyll Island.
Mm-hmm. Jekyll Island, yes. And what it was set up for, you know, for extracting monies from the, you know, the cash cow, you and I, you know.
Yep.
And so that in most cities and counties, you know, they're overtaxing people and, you know, impressing them for more money, more property taxes. And it's just astounding that what they've actually done, they've gotten a bigger a volume of people. They've got it down to 47 states now that have replied back to this young man that did the investigative report. And they're finding out that in their state, it's happening too. They're over taxing them on their, on their real estate. And so I was looking at buying a house here or there. And then the drawback about buying a house here is your roof.
Your insurance, your roof,
Insurance, you know, and there it's property taxes. Mm-hmm.
It is very true. I have a good friend in Dallas, and we own similar priced homes, paid about the same. He pays over two times, I think closer to almost three times what I pay in property tax here.
Well, plus in Florida, we have a system called Save Our Homes. It's been there since the 90s. Where if you're staying in your home for a long time and your neighbor sells and a new person comes in and you have pretty similar homes, you might be way underneath what your neighbor is because you're protected by the Save Our Homes law. So these things, when you do something like that, there are winners and losers to this. And I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
I too had a friend in Texas that had property and they were getting charged property taxes based on, well, like having a mansion on the house, and it was raw land.
Hmm.
They said it doesn't change when you put a house on it.
Really?
Interesting. I had never heard that before.
Yeah.
It was a few years ago, but scary.
The government always gets
there. And that's the bottom line with it, what this investigative report, the information he's found is that, property taxes are the bedrock for, your supportive services, county, education, et cetera. And they find in, the school district and what have you, they find in that a lot of these services, and for the pensions for teachers and police officers are becoming insolvent, And
we've had that
problem. They don't want to let that out to the public, And it's a major cover-up, that they're finding out now more and more with these 47 other states that are exposing the same scenario to them, And I'm thinking, weasel.
These are not self-correcting problems.
What have we created in Georgia?
Yeah, and then look what happened in the tax law in 17. The state and local tax deduction cut it to 10,000. And maxed it out at 10,000, and there's a lot of people paying a lot more than that in both states.
Yeah.
So that's not helping. It helps individuals, some of them. It hurts other individuals, some of them. And
right.
I don't have policy answers except one big one. Stop spending so much money, people. Our politicians spend like it's our money, which is ironic.
Well, and that's how it goes with the federal government, as far as their budgets per whatever facility, VA, for instance. If you don't if you don't spend your budget here and go over, next year if you're trying to conserve, next year you're not going to get it back.
Nope. It's called baseline budgeting.
Appreciate your time and effort, y'all. Great program. Okay. Long time listener.
I'm running out of time. You want to take a quick shot at the trivia question if you heard it?
Okay.
How many days have we had the S&P 500 index go down a point and up a point on the same day?
Oh, I think he dropped off. So
yeah, okay.
Why don't you just tell us?
It has happened since 1990. It has happened 52 times. And my point, because I always like to have a point, is that you might expect this during a really bad market more often, where you get these what they call dead cat bounces and things like that.
And it does happen in bad markets.
It does happen, but it happens more often in bull markets. And that's what caught my eye this morning. That's why I thought it made it interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's rare, but it's not that rare. All right. That went by quickly. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. This is the Band.